Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. And we have Terry Vanover here, who also works in the world of amicability, don't you, Terry?
Yes, absolutely.
And Terry works in the world of amicable divorcing as a divorce strategist. Please explain what a strategist is. That we talk to coaches now. A strategist sounds like it's fine-tuned a little bit more.
Yeah, I like that terminology because I think it's about being a problem solver, about having a plan, setting an intention. So I help you come through divorce without being legally, financially, and emotionally devastated. But just as importantly, I also help you get a game plan together, get a strategy plan together for healing from your divorce so that you can confidently re-enter the next new chapter. Because, you know, the sad fact is once you've had one divorce, the chance of your second marriage ending is 70%. And so it's really important that you really just take a good look at, you know, what caused the divorce, how you contributed to the decline in the marriage so that you can shift those patterns.
I look at this and tell me if this fits. I look at a divorce coach as being slightly reactive, reacting to whatever their clients are going through. I look at the strategist and what you just said a little bit more proactively. It has a plan. And when you work with people, you look at how they need to fit into the plan that you really just outlined. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I see myself as very much an action taker and a problem solver. So yes, I agree with you. It's not about reacting. It's about being proactive and looking at our own patterns and seeing how, you know, we can constructively work together to get through this divorce better. But you have to look at yourself. It begins with you. How are you reacting and how can you take a more proactive approach to the problem? You're exactly right. I like that.
Okay. So when we were talking, and Terry, people are very forgiving because Zoom is now the way people record. There's something going on sound-wise on your end. It's internal to the computer or something. Do you hear that at all?
I do not.
All right. So it's ever so slight, and I just wanted to identify if you saw anything going on, but that's okay. So when we were talking last week, you said something that I really focused on and thought about for today, and that is people are looking for emotional justice from a legal process being divorce. Please talk about that.
Yeah, I think that when people ask me, what's the number one mistake people make? I say it's people seeking emotional justice from a legal process. And I'm sure you've seen this in your line of work where people want to make their ex pay for the wrongs that they did. And that's not really what this is about. It's about uncoupling and doing it in a way where, you know, you're dividing the assets and determining what's best for your children. And you really want to honor that past marriage so that you can go forth and hopefully co-parent better. But I think that's the number one mistake people make. They're looking for justice. They're looking for a way to make their ex pay for whatever emotional distress that they've been put under, the betrayal, the hurt. And it's not going to happen. It's not designed that way. You know, our courts are not designed for that.
I know. So what do people do? How can somebody who feels betrayed, victimized, and they may be right to some degree, how do they get over that, move that aside so you can make appropriate decisions, clear-headed, and within the law, because you still have to address the law somehow, some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why I started using, you know, when I introduced myself, started talking about healing yourself during this process, because they go hand in hand. If you're not working on the emotional issues will start to hold you back and will start to cloud all those other issues. Your fears, your hurts, your anger will start to cloud the decisions you're making. It'll start to cloud whether you're thinking rationally and reasonably about property. It'll cloud whether you're thinking, like, you know, and also it'll impede you from thinking clearly when, say, you are working with an attorney or a mediator. You need to come to the table with a clear mind and constructive intentions, and not, you know, bringing up the past or unresolved issues, because it's a new divorce is not, if you've got kids, divorce is not the end of a relationship. It's the beginning of a new relationship because you have kids together. So now, if you've got communication issues that you had in the marriage and you're going forth and you have to co-parent, you really have to create a whole new relationship with your ex, because you're going to have to co-parent with that person. So yeah, I think all the emotions cloud all the other stuff. So it's really important that you're working through those emotions and coming to the table with the divorce professionals you're working with, so that you're not, with women in particular, one of the ways that I say see women get stuck, they get stuck on the home. And they're thinking from their hearts, and they're thinking, this is where I raise my children, and this is where, and there's something about that. And I've even worked with step families too, and stepmoms. And it's something about with again, I'm generalizing a little bit here, but women in their home, it's a sanctuary for them, and it's a place where there may be a lot of emotional ties for many mothers. So it's helping them to work through grieving the home and moving forward, so that they can make better decisions, say, for example, about their home and selling the home. Because oftentimes you'll see women get stuck on their home because they aren't able to let go of that emotional tie, and it starts to cloud their judgment of, like, the reality of, you know, as a single mom, you can't afford this large home anymore, and the fees and blah, blah, blah. So,
and Carrie, even more than that, what I see is when there's good equity in the house, and if it's sold, it could make you, put you in a much better financial position, that maybe you can even take some of that and buy something else and put some money away. But you're so right. The emotional connection is so strong, and that lingering connection to the past, which is almost like a survival connection, clouds rational judgment. And that's not to diminish how important the significance of a home is and memories. It's not to diminish that at all, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. In fact, we want to honor that grieving process. I actually acknowledge that losing your home, there's a grieving process to that. And so, you know, let's work through that and get closure as we go forward, rather than getting stuck on it and not really realizing, like you said, that, hey, there's some other opportunities that maybe you haven't seen from selling the home, because you're going to have a new home. And you know, people, you know, equate being in the home with those memories. So getting them to think forward, and that's where the strategy kind of comes in. Like, let's think about reframing this and thinking about developing a plan of what your new home might look like, what you want. Maybe there's some things you didn't get in your last home, but now this is a new opportunity for you.
Absolutely. And it's got to be tough, and I don't think one would realize it at the onset of the divorcing process, but if you stay in your home, you still have those memories of the marriage. And not that you don't want to carry the good memories with you and learn from the tougher aspects, but it's really anchoring you to the past, isn't it? Do you think?
Yeah. Yes. And so, you know, I've even had clients, like, write a letter to their home, like, thanking them for all the things that they've been given. and honor that. We don't want to deny that, because it is a huge part. And some people, like, you know, they've been in that home 25, 30 years. And, and the divorce may not have been something that they wanted. So they're leaving unwillingly, so to speak. But the reality is, like, we need to face reality and work through this grief and start looking at moving forward and what are the opportunities given to you. And it's exactly right. It was the same thing with that client that wrote the letter that was stuck in her home. It was a, she had a massive amount of equity in this home and did okay in the end, but it was just helping her to envision herself in the future. And I, you know, helping her to let go of some of those memories, and knowing that she's going to create new memories. In fact, you know, her children were grown, and think about, you know, I was like getting her to think about, like, look, having grandchildren in a smaller home that you've always wanted, because she was an artist. And so she never, and she had to compromise a lot in the marriage, and she didn't get to really. So I'm like, think about this. This is your opportunity to create the home you always wanted.
You know, there's something that I say to people, my own clients, and I've done a couple episodes on this myself, and that is, you must go through the emotional divorce before you go through the legal divorce, or the emotions will drive your decisions, and maybe not in a good way. So as a strategist, do you A, ever interface with attorneys, if there are attorneys at least representing your client? And if you do, well, even if you don't interface with the attorneys themselves, do you ever ask the client see if there can be a temporary halt put to the filing, so there can be a little bit of time, maybe a couple months of grieving and focusing on the emotions, so you can come back stronger to make decisions? Do you ever do that?
Yeah, I would say yes to a certain point. I think in the case that I was just referring to, it was slow because the ex was kind of dragging his feet on the sale of the home and everything. However, it did allow her that time to process all the emotions and to get through to closure and to, you know, get through to the next side. So I've talked with other divorce professionals in that one of the worst things that could happen, it doesn't happen all that often, but sometimes in people's zeal to like get through their divorce as quickly as possible, maybe they haven't taken the time to work through the emotions and make sure they're making the best decisions that they can, or thinking about it from a future self. I like to have my clients like think about things from your future self. When you look back, what do you wish you would have done? What do you want to see? How do you want to, you know, what do you want to create out of this? So yeah, going too fast can, that does make for a recipe for a lot of mistakes. I don't know if you've seen that a lot in your work where people.
Oh, yes.
Redo the plan and redo, you know, because they really didn't think it all out or didn't think about like, well, the long-term consequences of things, or what if things change? How might that look like? So, yeah.
No, I mean, you bring up an excellent point, because there, most people that I deal with, I would say 60%, they do take their time. Mm-hmm. They can't face the paperwork. They can only take a little bite-sized piece of the filing. And it's really not an enormous amount of paperwork. But in their emotional mind, everything is enormous. And so I have to be sensitive to that when I'm filing for them as a legal document preparation company. And then I have to be sensitive to the fact that there are two different emotional roller coasters that are operating side by side, and each spouse is at a different speed. And when one spouse who wants to move faster gets angry, she or he always does this. They always take their time. Okay, maybe they do. This is serious stuff now. So just, you know, now that we have me involved, let me just kind of massage the way forward and rest assured you will get to the end of this ride. But the serious issue is when they both want to go super fast, they have a lot of decisions to make on big assets, the house being one of them. Mm-hmm. And I can always tell when they haven't read through their settlement agreement properly. There's not enough time from the time I send it through the email till I get, okay, looks fine to me. No, it doesn't. You didn't read it. You have
where you want to take your time.
Right. Yeah. And I guarantee you, and I started doing this with people. I said, you're going to have to release me because you're going faster than I can even go transcribing what you want. I need time to read through things as we make adjustments. I am not legally responsible, so to speak, in my position because I don't represent people. I handle their filing. But I still don't want to make mistakes. You know, I want to do my best work for you. And it happened with one couple. I said, you're pushing me too fast.
Wow, yeah.
I'm concerned that we haven't thought some things through. And sure enough, a year after the divorce was final, they came back and said, well, this wasn't exactly written properly. And I'm like, I can see this, but you wouldn't review it with me. You just want to sign it and come in and get it over with. And
people, there's a couple of things that you said. One is the overwhelm. And so, like you said, a divorce is overwhelming because of the grieving process, you know, and I would argue it's overwhelming because of multiple layers of stress that are put on someone that's going through divorce. I mean, not only is this the process just overwhelming and the loss and the grieving that you're going through, but you know, it's two layers of stress that make it particularly difficult. It's the stress of the knowns, like, you know, your marriage is ending, which is horrible enough. You know, you might know that you have to sell your house or whatever that might look like, but it's the unknowns, like what does parenting time look like? If you've been a stay-at-home parent and you have to go back to work, what does my future career look like? It's all those unknowns on top of the known stressors of everything going on. So it just makes it so overwhelming. And another mistake, Judith, that kind of like what happened with that couple, I see this a lot, where people think that the paperwork, that the divorce ending and the legal paperwork is going to represent, and it's again where that emotional justice comes in, they think it's going to give them emotional closure. And then voila, they get the signed decree, you're done, you're divorced, and they're like, oh, I don't feel any better. You know, they think that that legal sheet of paper is going to give them emotional closure. So it doesn't. Like, you have to give that yourself. You have to work through that stuff yourself.
And I would even say, because I was divorced, it was the easiest divorce known to mankind. The year leading into it, well, once we knew we were going to get divorced, that year between knowing it and dealing with it was truly the saddest year of my life. I internalized it and I walked. Every night I was like Forrest Gump. I went to work, I came home, I walked for a couple hours, went to bed. And then one day I just got up and it was over. But I processed. I took a lot of time to process. When it was over, to your point, I didn't expect to feel as sad as I did because I knew it was the right thing to do. And it was for both of us, and we still talk and have remained friends, so it's all good on that end. I wasn't ready for another wave of emotion.
Yes, yes, yes. And so understanding that this is the best thing that I learned through doing the work that I do, Judith, was that I'm a linear thinker, and one of the best things that I learned to help people understand the grieving process is that it's not a linear process. I always thought like, well, first you're going to go through denial, and then you're going to go to bargaining, and then you're going to go to anger. And like, I thought it was like this step by step, you know, and then you're going to go to, you know, and you talked about the seven, you know, the seven stages
of divorce grief.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you add on the fear and pain and hurt, you know, and the best thing that I, you know, tell my clients is like, this is like you, you know, they call it a roller coaster, but I use a graphic where it's like a circle and it's just a line going back and forth, back and forth. One day you're like in acceptance, and then the next day you're back in fear. And then the next day you're like, oh, okay, you know, if only I had done this in the marriage, you're back in bargaining. Like it's, you're going to go ping, 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 pinging back and forth on this, you know, grieving cycle or whatever you want to call it. So I think to me that so telling my clients is it's normal, it's natural. You're going to go two steps forward. You might feel like you're going back, but that's a natural part of the process. And so, you know, teaching my clients how to like get to self-compassion and self-care is a big part of this work. So I'm glad to hear that you did take time and process this and walked and like took care of yourself physically and mentally. You know, I have like three things, like, you know, a strategy, right? A self-care strategy, physically, mentally, and spiritually. How are you nurturing yourself every day to get through this time? Because it is truly a devastating time. And you're right. Like, you know, you had an easy divorce. So in my case, it wasn't that at all. It was, it was contentious. It was, we made every mistake that you could make as a couple, him and I. And then to top it all off, while I was going through it, my mom had a stroke. So I lost the support of the one woman who I feel like would have been, she's been through a divorce having two young children, you know, when we were growing up. So I lost, you know, my mom, yeah. I lost my home because of the financial mistake. I did exactly what I said, holding on to the home. I was homeless. I lost all my financial credit, and then I was hit by a van.
Oh.
And I had several surgeries. You know, it was,
oh, wow.
Everything that could go wrong in a 6-month span, like, well, maybe even a 4-month span, occurred to me. And so talk about the overwhelm I felt. I mean, so I guess I, you know, again, I have to practice that self-compassion. What's like, no wonder you made the mistakes. You really weren't, you know, I was trying to just heal physically, recover from, you know, multiple injuries and surgeries, and at the same time trying to deal with a really high conflict ex at that time. So it is a really, you know, and I try to like tell my clients, like, look, you've never been through divorce before. You've never been through a pandemic before. And like, you're throwing all of it, like, I can't, you know, I can't even imagine, you know.
No, it is. It's an emotional pandemic.
Yes.
That's what it feels like. And listen, it doesn't matter how much stuff you have to divide or if there are children or not. We had no children and we made the same amount of money, no spousal support. We didn't care about dividing anything. We were too young. We didn't have anything really to divide, but it doesn't matter. The emotion was overwhelming because it's an enormous change of life.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And so I wanted to bring up an article on your blog that I found very interesting because it incorporates so many things and it comes under the emotional justice category. The title of it is Why Your Divorce May Be Your Fault. And it's something that we are all reluctant to. Well, I can't really say it as a mediator and filing. It's not my place to talk about it. Therapists have to be very careful how they address it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
This is a brilliant article or blog that you wrote. It's wonderful. Do you remember all the aspects to it? Because I have highlighted some things.
Girl, I do not. I do know that the editor of that divorce magazine gave me shit for it. So
why?
It was like, oh.
This is great.
She's a brilliant editor, though. And I think she helped tweak my message to make it even better. But look, this is not about blame. It's not about blame. But I will say, Judith, it's not about blaming, because look, I do believe it does take two to make a marriage work. Right. You know? But I will say that if you can look within you and recognize maybe your own patterns, or maybe I work with a lot of people pleasers and nice guys. I work with a lot of nice guys that sacrifice themselves for relationships and then end up feeling resentful and bitter because they're not truly being their authentic selves and not really showing up authentically in their marriages and aren't really speaking up for themselves. So I work with a lot of those people. And so it's not about blaming yourself, but it is about like taking responsibility about like where I didn't show up in the marriage or where I missed the red flags in the beginning, so that you feel more empowered. The great thing about it is it's not about like you're no longer a victim to anybody anymore. You actually feel empowered when you start to recognize your patterns. Because here's the thing, until you start to identify this stuff, you just are doomed to repeat it. Like I said, like the second, you know, marriage divorce rate is 70% people. Like, you know, you have got to do the work on yourself because you're just going to end up repeating it. And that's actually when a lot of my clients come to me, is when they're on their second and third divorce, or they've been divorced and then they recognize their patterns of like, oh, I'm still drawing in these really unhealthy women. You know, I was like, oh, I think the common denominator here is me. And it's like, yeah. So right.
No, you even said in the article, this is not about blame. This is about self-awareness.
Yes.
You used a phrase that people do use, and I get it too. I'm absolutely blindsided. Everything was going along so well, and all of a sudden, I'm served with divorce papers. And you have to let, we have to let those people talk. Because as we let them talk, they will say, well, okay, maybe things weren't that great. You know, and they have to come to their own level of self-awareness. Generally, there's no blindsiding. But I have to say, though, with my divorce, I knew the relationship needed help. It was obvious the relationship needed help. So I was not unaware of that. I was blindsided by the words, I want a divorce, without first saying, can we see if we can repair the relationship? So for me, that was the big shock. I didn't try and talk them out of it. I don't do that. If you tell me something very important, this is what you want, well, I'm going to let you have it. That's the way it is, and I'll deal with my own emotion. So we can be blindsided in different ways. It is rare, though, that you're married to somebody who's been living a double life, and all of a sudden you find out there's another family, there's all these other people in there. I mean, that is a rare situation, much more so, don't you think, than not paying attention to the warning signs. Maybe you've emotionally moved away from the relationship, but you don't want to admit it.
Yes, yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I think when I say blindsided, I think, you know, and again, like you said, you talk to people and then you start, and then the real stuff. So, well, yeah, we hadn't had sex in 10 years.
Seriously, it happens.
Yeah, I know. No, that is true. Like, it is shocking how many, like, there's no physical intimacy for years and years and years, or they were just, you know, felt like roommates. But yeah, I think the blindsidedness is like, I think people think that I was blindsided because I didn't even get an opportunity to try to change or to repair it. Now, that is a whole other thing, too.
That was my blindsidedness. Yeah. I didn't get an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute. Let me account for what I've done. Let me see if I can make it better and see what we can do about it. So I guess that's where my blindsidedness came in. But I learned afterwards. It is
absolutely unfair. And it is absolutely unfair to like kind of just be thrown, you know, hey, I'm unhappy and I'm leaving, and, you know, not even to give your partner, you know, the opportunity to try to repair. But some people just get to that point where they just can't do it. And it's just they just are not capable of giving more, or they're not capable of communicating their needs. I've got one particular client that I'm thinking of. I really felt like his ex just didn't have the communication skills to be able to say what she needed and what, how to, so he's exactly where you were. He knew the relationship needed repair, but he always thought he'd have the opportunity for her to like step up. And she, one day she just, I'm done.
Well, you know, if I were to be more introspective about me, I actually never blamed him. I still don't. I never did. I think for me, I just felt horrible that I contributed in a way that wasn't healthy. And it's like when you don't get to say goodbye or repair a relationship and somebody dies and, oh, shoot, the hope of making it better is gone. It's that hope of not being able to make something better that feels like this horrible loss, but you can still turn it into something positive.
Yes. So absolutely. So I'll call myself out in that I do take full responsibility for my behavior in the marriage. So, you know, I grew up with a lot of issues. I had a lot of childhood trauma. I was abandoned by my alcoholic father. Like I said, you know, my mom went through divorce. I couldn't have been 3 or 4. I don't remember. And my father was absent my entire life. And I was sexually abused. I grew up in poverty. So I have a lot of like shame, you know, and just feelings of unworthiness. And I brought that into my marriage and I expected my partner to make me happy.
Don't we all?
And here's what I
really until we get counseling, don't we all?
But you know what? That's so many people that is still the thinking that like, oh, my partner will make me happy. They'll love me and then I'll feel loved. I mean, I still see that with men. That's why they like give so much of themselves away in their partnership because they think they just give and give and give and she continues to love them, then they'll feel loved. And the sad thing is some of these people, some of the men that I work with actually kind of like have married women like me that have unhealed traumas and need to work on themselves and have married men that are givers, but haven't done the work on themselves. And what happens is, you know, these relationships are doomed. So like you said, it's using a bad situation and turning it around for good. And so in this case, it's A, healing myself. And the great news is, even though it was a crappy divorce from hell, my ex and I are like really good friends. His wife is my best friend. The four of us co-parent. I know, we're like the unicorns. People are like, oh my God, you guys are crazy. But I want more people to be like this. You know, you put the past behind you, you put your kids first, everything will come into place. And so I look at it as like, you know, he's moved on and he's got a wonderful woman and my kids have a wonderful stepmom and they have a great stepdad in their life. And I, you know, healed all those issues that I've been carrying around for 30 something years, you know, forever and ever. And now I get to teach other people, hey, you don't have to live with that stuff anymore. You can let it go and go on to create happy, healthy relationships with people, intimate partners, family relationships get better. It is shocking how much like people, you know, come to me and they, you know, they're really initially looking for like a new partnership to heal themselves because everyone wants someone to love. That's just human nature. And then, you know, they were like, oh my gosh, I'm getting so much, you know, I get along better with my mom and my sister and my father. Yeah. When you show up differently in your relationships, those relationships turn out for the better too.
Well, so that, and what you say in this article, because I have it in front of me, I'm looking through it, you say, A, if you really want to heal and figure things out, you have to look at yourself. You use this for a moment of introspection. You have to see what attracted you to the person that you're now divorcing, what led you to stay, and now why you're leaving. So you basically said, here's a great phrase, you to do an autopsy of your first marriage before moving into a new relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if listen, even if, it's a small percentage, like at least you can identify like perhaps where you didn't speak up enough or what were the red flags that you dismissed in the beginning or where you could have been more giving or more vulnerable in the relationship. It's just an empowering process if you understand what went wrong. And it's not about blaming anyone, but I believe that because I did the healing on myself and I looked within myself, I think if I hadn't done all that and if I had blamed my ex-husband, I don't think we'd have the relationship that we have. You know, I think because I did take accountability and I did look within myself and figure out like, you know, where I could have shown up more, where I was, you know, asking too much of someone rather than blaming him. Cause I mean, you know, he was not a perfect husband, but he was a, you know, good dad, a good husband. But I think there were some things probably looking back, he maybe would say, yeah, I could have stepped up more there. There's some, you know, hopefully we all do that. Like, it's not a matter of like blaming yourself or being, or staying in that, you know, and again, it's not all about like you, because I do
the victim head. It's not, you don't stay in the victim role.
Right.
Right.
But I think understanding your role in situations will help you no longer be a victim.
And here, just to wrap up this article, because I just loved everything you said. Although it's difficult, it's time to reflect on your decisions, your communication style, your conflict management techniques, and how your past impacts the choices you make today. Until you've taken accountability, the likelihood of being in another divorce, your statistic remains high. I thought that mm-hmm. was brilliant to end, because that kind of sums it up.
Yeah, and I think that's where that strategy piece comes in for me, because I'm very much an action taker and I like to give people clear tools and resources that are going to like help you. You know, I help you understand like what it is that's preventing you from communicating in a way that can be received, or what it is that you're truly needing. And is that coming from a need of you know, that wounded little child? Or is that coming from like a need that's really truly what you need? So coming up with those distinctions, but giving you like communication skills and strategies, and again, recognizing your own patterns, because until you recognize your own patterns of like how you're showing up in a relationship, in a way, I have a woman who's married currently, and it's working with her is really amazing, because it's helping her to see the filters that she's seeing things. And when she was getting into conflicts with her husband, she now can see the filter, how she was seeing him through, and recognizing how she was showing up and then becoming defensive. And that wasn't leading to a constructive, you know, problem solving in the marriage. It was just contributing to ongoing conflict, because she's not getting his needs met. He's not getting his needs met. So I think it's really about looking within and like taking back control, even in situations where you feel like you aren't in control, like where you've been betrayed. And I've been betrayed, now not by a spouse, but by a family member. And looking within me and understanding, like, what did this trigger within me? How can I get my power back? How can I feel more, you know, in control? Because at that time, that situation made me feel very powerless. So I had to look within me and say, okay, the situation is triggering some powerlessness in me. How can I get back my control? How can I get back my voice and my power within me? Because I can't control this other person. You know, you can't control, let's say you do have a high conflict ex, you can't control that other person, but you can certainly control how you react. And you can certainly heal those triggers at that person, because I believe the universe sends people to us as messengers of things inside of us that we need to heal. And the universe just keeps sending people until you heal it, you know? Right. And it's amazing. So if you look at it as an opportunity for growth and for personal healing, you welcome it. That situation with me was so painful and so, it was not fun. I'm not even going to lie. But like the amazing thing was like, I got to use the tools that I give to other people and I got to look at it as an opportunity for more healing, more growth. It brought my husband and I even closer together. So it's, you can start to welcome some of these uncomfortable situations. Like you said, with the divorce, sometimes divorce is, it can be the start of a whole new life in a way that you never knew. You know, even if you were like content and happy in your marriage, and if you really do some work, it can bring you to a whole new level of freedom and happiness and contentment. I never would have dreamed I'd feel the way I feel. Be honest with you.
No, I agree. I live by the same philosophy, and it's very hard that when anything challenging comes into my life, that I have to stop and say, what's the point? What am I supposed to learn? How do I turn this around for my benefit? And no, I don't want horrible things to keep happening. I really want to live a blissful life. I want to come back as a supermodel and a trust fund baby. I want all the superficialities that could potentially make me feel really good and not be a consequential byproduct of other people making life decisions for me. But I still say the only way to look at life as being fair is to say we get in our lives things that will help us grow. Now, where's my growth opportunity in this? And if we can keep focusing on that, then we will feel more in control because we have the power to make choices in terms of how to overcome those challenging situations.
And it's trusting in yourself and trusting that you are okay. And that's a big part of like the spiritual part of what I do too, is, giving people some tools to like understand and getting to that acceptance. Nothing is in our control. If the pandemic has taught the world anything, is that nothing is in our control, right? You were living your life. You were doing your thing and you thought like, oh my gosh, this whole pandemic has been like a test and nothing is in your control. So you can surrender to it and accept and know that and trust that I will be okay no matter what. And that's kind of like that spiritual element of it and learning that you're okay and you don't get your happiness from external circumstances. You have to be happy within.
And I want to finish because we're coming to the end of the hour, Terry. I wanted to just touch upon something, and that is you also work with groups. You work with women's groups, you work with men's groups. Yes. And is there any kind of overview you can provide in terms of how men deal with divorce versus women?
Judith, I think the biggest, I first started out with women only and then just kind of, tested the men, see what would happen. And then it has grown phenomenally. I have a Facebook support group that is in the thousands. And what I learned when we initially started, there was just small little groups that we were meeting together in person. And what I initially learned was, holy crap, men will talk. I would have people say to me all the time, like, you run a men's group? Like, do they even talk? And I was like, oh my God, I have to shut them up. It's like that. I had to really like get my management skills because I had to like, once you provide a safe place for men, they really do open up and share. So I think, I think people would be surprised about that because it's not quote unquote acceptable for men to show signs of quote unquote weakness. It's not weakness. It's just emotions and it's pain and it's hurt. And I'm telling you, the level of pain that I've seen I think it was last Friday. I just had to take a break for a bit because sometimes it does get overwhelming seeing people's pain day in, day out, the heartache. And I tell you that men take it a lot harder than the women do. If that's the two differences, the men are like, they're looking for support. They're looking for a safe place to, expose their pain, but to be open and vulnerable with other men. And I think that may be something in our society that we're not giving men. We're not giving men a safe place to be themselves, to share their pain, to share their emotions. Because, I mean, I'm telling you, it's like, you know, I had to hire admins to run that group because it just was like the management of it. You know, we had to contain it, you know, and still make it a healing space for everyone. And whereas women, I think like you said, how you took that year to kind of process through. Mm-hmm. By the time they've made the decision, and most of the time it's women that decide to file, they have processed a lot of the emotions, not all of them, but they processed a lot of it and are like kind of thinking more along the lines of like how to get through this, you know, how to more about resources. Whereas men are looking more for the friendship, the camaraderie, the support, the encouragement from each other. So that was really eye-opening, that if you provide a safe place for men to share, they will share. They will share their emotions. That is a myth, that men don't share their feelings and that they don't talk. Mm-mm. I don't see that.
Is one of the big issues in men's fear or concern or responsibility going forward, the financial burden of not only keeping themselves together financially, but also providing maybe alimony, spousal support, and child support? Does that come up very much?
Oh, yeah. That definitely comes up. But the number one issue, I think, for the men is the children, the parenting time. They are not granted, especially initially, men are not granted equal access to the children. And I see that a lot where I can't speak to this exactly, but it seems as though that the women are holding on to the children more so with the parenting time and until the courts get involved or whatever, the men are constantly fighting for the parenting time, fighting for the parenting time. So their number one issue is not being granted initially equal access to their children. You know, I think there's a myth again in our society where people feel that like, oh, a father's role is not as important as a mother's role. And as someone who was abandoned by their dad, I will argue the opposite. You know, a father's presence in their children's life is just as important, and we need to honor that. And so many men are heartbroken and in so much pain because of that, not being able to see their children. So that's their number one issue. And then yes, definitely the second of like, what does finances look like post-divorce?
Right. And I'll just end with on men and their children. In California, an equal division of time is a priority. That's what the court would like to go for, unless given extenuating circumstances, even when the child is an infant. But what I learned from this work is that there are very nurturing men. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't give men credit for being nurturing. They may be nurturing in a slightly different way, but they're still nurturing. And I've seen enough men become so emotional in my office at the thought that they can't see their children at least half the time or close to that. It was very heartwarming because I had a very nurturing father. It was very heartwarming to see this.
So yeah, Terry, okay. And you know what comes up to mind is Fred, thinking of nurturing, you think of Fred Rogers, right?
Right.
You know, and you know, we need to allow our men to step into those roles, to step into that nurturing roles for sure. Yeah. And so, and they're wanting it.
I think so too, and not just because it's less child support. It's really because I'd really like to have a relationship with my children.
And I would agree with you. Yeah, it's not about the child support. That never comes up. And again, this is a safe space, and they're pretty open and they're pretty honest, you know. So I don't see that at all. It's not about the child support. It is about the time.
Maybe once in a while that'll be something, but I think primarily, I just get to see a lot of men that really love their kids. Okay, yes. So we've come to the end of the hour. Terry, I know people are going to want to get in touch with you. How can they do it?
Well, you know, you can always go to, this is where my Southern accent's going to come in, right? Choosingtorise.com. You know, and you can learn about all my events and workshops. We've got a workshop coming up in a couple weeks, and you can get your free 7 Steps for Healing from Divorce book. So you can go to choosingtorise.com for all that information, or you can always, you know, look me up on Facebook. I'm pretty active on Instagram and Facebook under Terry Vanover, and I can, you know, shoot you over to my amazing support groups.
I think that would be great. And when I write show notes when we air the episode, I'll make sure there's a connection between you and the listeners. Terry, thank you so much. This was a wonderful hour. I really appreciated it.
Oh, thanks, Judith. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
you're going to love it. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host, amicable divorce expert. And if you would like to get in touch with me, you can do so through my email, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com, or through my website, divorceresourceinc.com. Thank you again for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.